Okay. Can anybody, everybody here in the back? Good? Okay. Well, my name's Roy, and I'm an addict. And this is a great honor for me to be here and talk to you people, and we all share in each other's recovery. I'm scared shitless, but that's okay too, you know. Whenever I come up to New York City, I think of this little cartoon that I saw as a kid. These little mice and the country mouse came up to see his sophisticated city cousin. Figure like here we are, the hillbillies from Philly coming up to New York City. It's like, wow. But, you know, NA and the 56 years and all of us being here together tonight, this is really cool. I mean, this is so cool. NA is so great. And, you know, the first time, when I first, I was raised out in the California Bay Area, just south of San Francisco. And the first time I heard of a 12-step program, I'd been committed to a mental institution by my family. I mean, the drugs had kicked my ass, like everyone here. And I was committed in there. It's in a straitjacket, shackled to a bed, all that good stuff. And they were doing electric shock treatments to the drug addicts. This was back in 1968. There was no patient's bill of rights. So when you got put in a place like that, you could pretty much get lost in there. And they were using these electric shock treatments just like an experiment to see if they could cure drug addiction. And there was a guy in there who started telling me about AA and the 12 steps and how it could help me with my problem. And I asked him, you know, and it sounded pretty cool. It sounded good. And I asked him, well, how did you end up in here? And he said, well, he had had a slip. And I didn't really know what that meant. You know, was that a woman's clothes or what the hell, you know. But anyway, you know, after a bit, I was able to get out of that place because it was horrifying. I saw them taking, you know, young people like me and turning them into vegetables and then them getting shipped off to custodial care in state facilities. And it's really scary. So I got out of there. I used a little bit more. And I ended up getting in contact with a friend of my family's who was an AA guy. And this guy's name was Bob L. And he had an art gallery in Palm Springs. He was a professional jazz pianist. And he knew everybody. He was one of these guys who came over in the 30s to play jazz in New York City, played at the Stork Club, played in Harlem, was, you know, big-time musician. And the guy had a really good heart. And he took me around AA meetings, and I got some degree of acceptability because I was with him, I think. And I ended up moving back to Philadelphia. I was still clean. So because of some job opportunities, I wanted to get in the elevator mechanics trade. So, you know, I came back to Philly, back east, and I did not get a very good reception in AA in the Philadelphia area. And the people, you know, they just didn't want a young drug addict around. And one night after I'd been booted out of a meeting, a woman followed me out and told me about this club in this AA club called the Young Men's Club, and, you know, maybe I could hang out down there and get help. So, you know, I went down there, and they did accept me. And this was a Kensington is a, you know, kind of a rough working class area of Philadelphia. It's and these guys let me hang there, but I got a really distorted view of the 12-step program down there because this club was filled with guys who were like you know, enforcers for different labor organizations like the Teamsters or the Roofers Union. There was an organized group, a gang, they called them the Kensington, you know, the Irish Mafia. They were professional burglars and car thieves. And the philosophy of that young men's AA club was, you can do anything you want, just don't pick up. And what they meant by that, and they would add to that, if you're a burglar, you're going to be a better burglar sober. Well, we all know that don't go too far in recovery, but I thought, well, this isn't exactly the way I heard it out in California, but this sounds good to me. Man, you can do anything you want and, you know, just don't pick up. Yeah, sure. Well, anyway, the other thing, you know, and I can't lay off on them my future problems with accepting the steps and the recovery in this program on the Young Men's Club. But one thing they were big on was going into hospitals, institutions, prisons, and doing what we call then, you know, 12-step work, carrying the message to the person, the addict who's still suffering. And that I got from them. And I can look back today on my life, and I'm 15 years clean today. And I thank you for that. And I've always had a lot of shame about, you know, that I always would relapse. I mean, a lot of shame about that. But I can look back on my life and see that the moments that I was happiest is when I was involved reaching out to the sick, suffering addict in institutions, prisons, hospitals, and, you know, that's a big part of my life today. I love it. But back then, what happened was, as people heard that there was this young drug addict in AA, parents of who were in AA of you know, people who were strung out on drugs would come and ask me to talk to their sons or daughters. So we got a little contingent of you know, people, and we were guys who we were going to the Young Men's Club, and they were letting us hang out there. And then they got an attitude of like, well, we don't want the addicts here. And there was a guy who led that movement. You know how this group conscience and stuff can take on a life of its own, and we don't want the addicts there. And his name was Horseshit Bill. And Horseshit Bill, I called it, because every other word out of this guy's mouth was horseshit, horseshit this, horseshit that. And he led the movement, and, you know, no more addicts down there. And the irony of it is that I heard from a guy from the club some years ago that Horseshit Bill died of an overdose of pills because he didn't want the mirror held up to him about drugs and, you know, that alcohol, as we all know, is just another goddamn drug. So... at that point, I was, you know, the little group we had of clean addicts kind of fell apart. And I left Philadelphia, went back to California, see if I could find some work out there. And I looked up Bob Lane and was complaining to him about, you know, AA's this and that. And Bob was a very patient man. And it just so happened that the week I was there, they were having a convention in AA. And Bob L., he knew everybody. I mean, in his art gallery, he would give me jobs there, vacuuming the floor, cleaning the windows, stuff like that. So, I mean, the people who came into his gallery were people like Lucille Ball, Red Skelton, Bob Hope, Bob knew, you know, Dizzy Gillespie, and I knew everybody. But for our purpose, he knew Jimmy Kay. And, you know, and he was, that weekend, you know, he told me, look, man, you know, there's going to be some big shots from this Narcotics Anonymous. You're going to meet them. I'm going to put you in touch with them. Because he just wanted me to shut me up from complaining, I guess. So I met Jimmy Kay, and there were two other people with him, and they gave me these little white books, and we had an impromptu meeting at the, you know, in a room to ourselves, and we had two that weekend, and it was really cool. And I was impressed because, you know, I was a young kid. I was 20 years old. And these guys were, you know, old-time, old-head junkies. And they accepted me. Here I was, this, you know, this burnout kind of hippie wannabe speed freak guy, and these old time junkie guys, they accepted me, and they told me about this NA program and how it was for us and how I could stay clean. And they said, you know, take these books back east, get them copied, and start meetings. And I never wanted to see the East Coast again, but I came back to Philadelphia, and I was really excited because it was like, you know, now we got something of our own. And the thing of how this all, you know, all this flows and how each of us plays a part in the NA history, all of us, we've all reached out to that new person, to that still sick, suffering addict. And in doing that, we're playing a part in NA history. We're helping this program grow. We're bringing in that lifeblood, the new person, into our groups and our program. We're giving a new person a shot at a new life. And in doing that, we're making NA history, and it's really cool. And so I came back with those books, and there was a guy from the Young Men's Club. We called him Bill the Printer. And he helped me get these books printed up. We got thousands of these books printed up. And I went around trying to start meetings. Well, it wasn't no slam dunk trying to get meetings started. People just didn't want, you know, drug addicts and the whole concept. People were freaked out by that. Well, you know, you want to bring a group of drug addicts here, and and I tried churches, I went around to the Y's, youth centers, hospitals. I couldn't get anybody. They would say things like, well, where are these NA meetings that you want to start? Where are your other meetings? And I would tell them, well, they're out in California. And it's like, well, when you get some started up around here, you have some references that we can call. Come on back. One guy in Jersey, I went to a youth center over there. This guy must have had some connection with law enforcement at one time. He started yelling at me, you know, like, drug addicts, you guys can't congregate. I'm going to call the state cops on you guys, and you can't do what you want to do. And really freaked me out. So, well, you know, here we want to do something with our lives. We want to get ourselves straightened out here. And the dude was pretty nasty. So I wasn't having much success getting a meeting place. Now, one of the guys who was at the Young Men's Club had left there and gone to Eagleville Hospital and taken a job as a therapist. Now, he became a pariah in the Young Men's Club because part of the Young Men's Club philosophy also along with you can do anything you want, just don't pick up, was like, rehabs are bullshit, therapy's bullshit, psychology's bullshit, psychiatry's bullshit. Everything was, you know, it just, and really, their view was the rest of the AA is bullshit, just what's happening here in this club is the only thing that's going. So Dick F. became a pariah. And I had kept contact with all the guys from the club, and he asked me, about going to Eagleville Hospital and talking to the head psychiatrist there, this Dr. Ottenberg, and presenting about an NA meeting there. So I went up there. Now I want to tell you a little story about, because this is how, you know, God uses each of us, and I'll use that term God for my higher power. It just makes the thing flow easier for me talking. God uses each of us. And to let you know a little bit of what I was like, drugs made a moron out of me. And, I used to live at my grandmother's house. She was a kind old Irish woman. She would let me stay there. And I would leave my drugs out and back because I didn't want to bring them in the house. So one day I'm there, and I want to go out into the backyard and get the drugs, but I'm really paranoid. Now, I was like this all the time. So I'm too afraid to go into the back, but I want to get off bad. So I'm thinking, you know, if I was only invisible, if I was invisible, I could walk out there and get my stash, and then I'd be cool. And I'm looking around the room, and I see the blanket on the bed. And the blanket's on the bed, and it's like, you know, if I put that blanket over my head, they wouldn't be able to tell who it was, and that would be just like being invisible. So that's what I did, see? And I went out and got the drugs, and one of the neighbors was to see me and called my sister and said, you know, there's somebody in your back with a blanket over his head, walking around. Is that your brother? Did you guys start letting him come back to the house again? You know, what's going on? It's a little early for Halloween, no? But that's the goofy kind of, I was goofy. But yet, the higher power used me in this NA history. So I went up to see Dr. Ottenberg. Now that's what I was like, goofy. So I go up to see Dr. Ottenberg, and I'm telling him, you know, all you need is NA, and I got a handful of white books. All you need is NA. This Narcotics Anonymous program, this is going to straighten out all the drug addicts you have in here. You don't need this rehab. You don't need your therapy. You don't need your psychiatry. All you need is NA and these steps and our program, and you might as well just go on and close this place. Now, this is a highly educated psychiatrist. I'm a high school dropout, nitwit, talking to this guy and his wife, who's also a psychiatrist, you know, trying to do a pitch to let us have a meeting. So, in the second interview that Dick arranged, and I went up again, and this time I, you know, Dick had said, you know, why don't you downplay all that, and I did. But the higher power touched this Dr. Ottenberg's heart, and he let us have a meeting. And he let, you know, the patients and residents of the hospital come to the meeting. He let outsiders come to the meeting. And that was the first, from my understanding, the first NA meeting on the East Coast. And that was 1969. And, you know, from that, we got this. And how cool is that? I mean, that's really, really cool. I mean, the higher power works. And the higher power loves us drug addicts. He loves us, man. He wants us to be clean, and he wants us to have a life. It's cool. And, you know, we got a meeting started in, so that Mike and Danny S. And Mike's here tonight, and him and his brother, and Maureen, she's here also. We got a meeting started in Philadelphia, Broad and Duncannon. That was the first meeting in the city of Philadelphia. And, you know, we got a meeting started in New Jersey. And it just, you know, slowly spreading. And I wanted to say, like, for, I don't want to embarrass Maureen, but all those first meetings in our area, in Philadelphia, a woman participated in starting those meetings and in carrying the message. And a lot of things today, you know, the women are kind of shunted aside and left out. But in NA history, women played an important part in starting, you know, getting this thing rolling. And the meetings back then, one thing, you know, we knew what we were there for. And what we were there for was to help each other stay clean. And you may not like somebody. Maybe you didn't like the guy, but in that meeting, it was like, man, we were there to help each other stay clean. And it didn't matter if I liked you or not. We were there, and, you know, and a new person would come in, or we'd get a line on a new person, and it was like gold, man. We would, like, kidnap that person, you know what I mean? It was like, yeah, you didn't let them out of your sight, and whatever it took, how far it was, we just did it because we were fired up about this program. We were fired up about NA, And the meetings were a little different, like down our area today. And I know there's some variations because I've been in different meetings in different parts of the country. There's some variations, but the meetings back then, it was important that, well, first of all, there was no time limits on the meetings. And I think back today, like, you know, a lot of us had jobs. How we would you know, go in and start at 7 and go to 11. There were no time limits on the meetings. And it was important, we thought, that everybody got a chance to be called on. So you all got called on. Because there were people like me who were scared and would never raise your hand. You know what I mean? But you got called on. Now you can always say, well, I pass. But if you had something eating at you, something bothering at you, you got called on. See? And that was an important thing. And if there were like 30 people at the meeting and we thought it was going to go on too long, we'd divide the meeting up into you know, workable groups. Just so everybody got a chance to share. Everybody got a chance to share. And we had the chairperson ran that meeting. And, you know, they would pick, they might talk a little bit on topic, or maybe they'd bring a speaker in, or whatever they would, however they would do it. But they would run that meeting and call on everybody. And I don't remember, there were fights that happened out in the street. But when we were in that meeting, there was something real respectful happening there, something really, really special. It was almost like a mystical thing going on. Because we knew it was life and death. That this thing we have, this addiction disease, it's life and death. There ain't no shit about it. And, you know, the meeting spread. In 1972, we had our first person who was a... He was clean almost a year. And... He got involved in a relationship that he was suggested not to get into, drifted away from the program, started using, got popped, and he hung himself in a jail cell. And, man, we were devastated. It was like the first person who really, you know, was solid like the rest of us going to meetings who relapsed and died. And I remember we all went to his funeral, and hugs weren't a real common thing back in those days, but there were hugs that night at his viewing, man, because it just brought it home to us about how dangerous this disease we have is, how it's a killer. And there, like I said, there's no shit about it. And Jimmy C., oh man, I wish he was here tonight. You know, and you think back and you think of all the people who you've known who, you know, they had a shot at this program and then they let go and they're not here anymore. And why are we here? And I've tried to figure that out about myself because I, like I said, I relapsed a lot, but I can't figure it out. And I don't think it's, you know, one person's worth more than the other, but... It's a badass disease, you know that? Badass, man. But this NA program gives us a way to arrest it, a way to recover, and it's really cool. We formed an intergroup in NA because we got our first prison meeting in 1972 at Chester County Hospital. And because we had that philosophy from Young Men's Club and from, you know, of getting involved in institutions and carrying the message of how important it was. So the first prison we got into was Chester County Prison, which is a county outside of Philadelphia. And there was, at that time, there were no stipulations. There was no H&I or anything, and there were no stipulations on clean time and anything like that. They just let us in and have a meeting. And the way the meetings were run was, you know, we'd go into the meetings and the prisoners or patients or whatever would all participate. We'd run it like a regular meeting in the street. So my sponsor asked me to pick up a guy on the way to a meeting, a new guy who was a son of somebody in AA, and would we take him to the meeting? Because this guy thought he might want to get clean. So we took this guy to the meeting, and he was a little Irish guy. He had a one of them Popeye Doyle hats and red hair, and he was a real character. Well, by the time we got into the prison, he must have taken something before we picked him up. So by the time we got into the prison, this guy is like really he's loaded, and he got us thrown out of the prison. And it took us about 3-4 months before we could, assure the county people that we would start doing, some kind of self-regulation of who was going to go in there and clean time. But in those years, 72, 73, and pretty much 74, in the Philadelphia area, we had more meetings in institutions in mental hospitals, rehabs, and prisons than we did on the street, because we just, that's where we were going to get the new blood. That's where our focus was, to get carry our message to the still sick suffering addict, and get the people out of there and into our meetings. And we started intergroup to try to coordinate all that, and we were printing up our own literature. We kept making inquiries to California. We didn't get any reply. We really didn't get any reply from California until about 1976, when two fellows from our area went out there, and they took copies of the literature that we had produced ourselves. And the people out there told us, look, use up what literature you have, and then the rest of it, start getting it from California, which we were okay with. And they debated all that. We debated, should we just do our own thing, and, we'll be our own NA, and California will be its own NA, and, we didn't know what direction to take. But the higher power, he got it all worked out. I don't mean to offend anybody who's, the higher power got it all worked out. And, when they came back from California, because up to that time, it was always like, well, is there anybody out there? We would get an occasional letter back, and we'd get I know they sent us a letter, because we wanted to know there were other people. There were other people in other areas doing what we were doing. We wanted to, be connected and know that we were part of something. And so we had gotten one letter with addresses of maybe 25 to 50 different NA groups across the country from California. And we wrote letters out, telling them what we were doing and introducing ourselves, and we got two replies back. And we had gotten a phone number for an NA group that was here in New York City, and we were able to contact someone there. But overall, we really didn't know where the connection or what was going on until those fellas got back from California, and that gave us some direction. And at that time, we started looking to, California for our literature, and because we had talked about changing some of the words in the little white book, and changing some of the words in the preambles we use, things like recovered to recovering, changing the word drugs to addiction. We talked about, writing our own 12 and 12, and not using AA stuff. But the higher power got it all straightened out. And, in the middle of things, now I'm losing focus, and I'm sorry about that. But, for me, for my personal life, 15 years ago, I came back to this program, and I have tried in my life every screwball cult and way to try to get some kind of relief from addiction, from fundamentalist Christianity to eating brown rice and alfalfa sprouts, practicing Tai Chi and yoga. And not that there's anything wrong with any of that if you integrate it into our 12-step program, but I would always get carried away and try to make that the whole thing. And I never stayed clean. I always ended up with a spike in my arm or a drink in my hand, and was never able to get anything together. So 15 years ago, I came back after having a moment of sanity and seeing clearly that what I had missed all along was that it wasn't just about the drugs. It was about not knowing how to live. And that's what these 12 steps are for, a way to relearn or learn a new way to live. And for me, that's today my life, and it's not things around me, because this 15 years I've gone through my share of things that were unhappy. I've had 3 children and 3 of my kids in prison. One's still in prison for heavy-duty stuff, violent stuff, and it grieves my heart. I have physical problems with hep C and cirrhosis. Was just put on the transplant list for liver. And these are heavy things. But, you know, with all that, beyond my wildest dreams is what goes on in my inside my head. I have a peace of mind and an open-mindedness about life that I never had before. I have less fear in my life than I've ever had before. And that's all come from these steps. And the relationship I have with my higher power today has come from you people. I learned about God through you guys, because I never found anybody turn their back on me in NA. And I was, guy who relapsed, guy who did some not nice things to people in the program over the years. And yet you never turned your back on me. You always opened up your arms and told me, hey, man, we're glad to see you. We're glad you're back. We love you. And that's really cool. And I thank you for that. And, NA, there were all these things I wanted to talk about, the history and the flow of the flow of NA and the little part I played. But I know everybody in this room tonight, we're all clean, and that's cool. And in being clean, we're changing the world. We're making this world a better place. And I know in our basic text, it has something in there about, well, we can't change the world. And I disagree with that. We are changing the world. We are making this world a better place to live. Yeah, damn straight we are. And I'll tell you what, as addicts, we are society's write-offs. Yet, each of us being clean, reaching out to another addict, the sick, suffering people who are still out on the street, we're changing this world, and we are making it a better place. And that's more than all the psychiatrists and psychologists with all their knowledge. They can't do what we do, because there is nothing like one addict talking to another, helping that man or woman get recovery. And that's what I really love about NA. We are changing the world. And everybody here tonight, we're clean, damn straight, we're making this world a better place. And I'm Roy, I'm a drug addict, That's all I have to say. Thanks.